Chapter 1. London, December 1588. For 2 years I had believed myself safe from Robert Polley, that scheming viper of a double agent. As long as he remained a prisoner in the Tower, the secret of my identity was safe, a secret which could cost me my life. He had played an ambivalent part in bringing the Babington plotters to justice, and I was still unsure where his loyalty lay, if indeed he had any. Had he been a sympathiser as the conspirators had believed, almost to the end? Or had he been truly working as an agent for my sometime employer, Sir Francis Walsingham? Perhaps even Sir Francis himself was unsure. Whatever he believed, he had ensured that Polley was securely locked away in the Tower when the plot was uncovered. But unlike the other conspirators, Polley was not executed by that most brutal of methods, hung, drawn and quartered. Instead, he had remained for more than 2 years a prisoner, yet a prisoner, so it was said, who lived like a lord, and had murdered a fellow prisoner, the Bishop of Armagh, with a gift of poisoned cheese. The source of his riches was one of the many mysteries which surrounded Polley, a man of obscure birth, dubious employment, and cautious patrons. He yet commanded considerable wealth. When I had first encountered him, he was a prisoner in the Marshalsea. Yet there, too, he lavished his money on rich food, receiving his mistress at fine dinners in his room, while refusing to see his wife and daughter. We were sitting, Simon Hetherington and I, beside a generous fire in a tavern on Bankside, south of the river, and not far from the Rose, where Simon had just given his first performance in a man's part, having at last been able to turn his back on the women's roles he had played with such success as a boy. It was a double celebration, being also Simon's 19th birthday, and several of his fellow players had joined us. Guy Bingham, musician and comic, Christopher Haig, young romantic, and Richard Burbage, heroic second son of James Burbage, head of Simon's company. It was not Burbage's company which had been playing at the Rose. Simon had been on loan to Philip Henslow, who was short of players, three having died in the late summer of the sweating sickness. "It was no great part," Simon said modestly but truthfully, "but at last I have shed my petticoats and wigs." Christopher raised his glass. "I never saw a halberd carried with such a flourish. We shall have you back with us and speaking at least six lines before we know it." Simon flushed but took the teasing in good part. He turned to Richard. "And is there any word from your father?" "He hopes to join us here," Richard said. "He had a meeting with Lord Strange this afternoon." Burbage's company had been for many years Leicester's men, but the Earl of Leicester had died in September. It was now nearly Christmas. They had been allowed to carry on performing until the end of their planned season, but could no longer continue without a patron. Despite the growing importance and popularity of the playhouses, in the eyes of the law of England, a company of players without a noble patron would be classed as vagabonds and could be imprisoned. They could even lose an ear or a nose, a fate no player dared contemplate. Burbage's men would have ceased performing anyway as winter closed in, for audiences would not come to the open-air playhouses in bitter weather. But if the company were not to drift apart, Burbage must secure a new patron soon. He had received an encouraging reply from Lord Strange to his request for a meeting, and the present company, who had come to cheer Simon in his small part, could ill conceal their anxiety beneath all the banter.
"Simon Hetherington."
A big man, built like an ox, had approached our table. His dark hair sprang from his head like coils of wire, surrounding a bald circle, a secular tonsure, while more dark bristles sprouted from his ears and nostrils. There was something familiar about him, but I could not place him. "Arthur." I was not sure Simon was quite pleased to see the man. He was not hostile, but rather embarrassed. He turned to us. "Arthur is the gatekeeper at the Marshalsea. I used to lodge with his sister. How is good wife Lucy?"
"Hearty as ever," said the man,
hooking a stool with his foot and drawing it up to our table. He sat down and drank deeply from his jar of beer, then wiped his mouth on the back of his hand. I remembered now where I had seen him. The other players looked faintly amused that the man should join us, but they were a motley, tolerant lot. The gatekeeper looked round at us all, then pointed at me with a finger like a well-filled sausage.
"And I know you," he said,